Welcome to the Omfer podcast.
Hello and welcome to the OMFIF DMI podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends, new developments and innovation, as well as the policy, technology and regulatory challenges in digital finance. I'm John Orchard, and today I'm talking to Charles Kerrigan, partner at CMS Law, and to Phantom, the founder and CEO of Sovereign Wallet Network Global. Thank you both for joining me. Charles, digital finance law is new but already developed and complex. Tell us about your work in it, please.
Thanks, John. I'm happy to be here. I work at CMS, which is an international law firm, and I'm a digital assets lawyer. So my background, I evolved into it. I started out as a corporate finance lawyer. I did technology transactions in corporate finance next. Then I did fintech. Then I did crypto. And here I am as at the end of that evolution.
Thanks very much, Charles. Phantom, tell us about Sovereign Wallet Network, please.
Thanks, John. I'm glad to participate in OMFIF podcast. My name is Phantom Seok-gu Yoon. I'm the founder and CEO of Sovereign Wallet Network. Sovereign Wallet and SWN Global companies are six group of companies located in Korea, Singapore, Sweden, Estonia, India, and Uzbekistan. SWN developed MetaMui. It is an identity-based meta blockchain for financial applications such as CBDC, tokenized securities, and NFTs. MetaMui is also a permissioned public blockchain network so that any government can publish their CBDC and enjoy the instant availability of cross-border payment network.
Thank you very much, Phantom. I'll explore what this technology helps solve, plenty that it needs to address, as we'll discover. And thank you both again for joining us today. In 2020, BIS and seven central banks outlined foundational principles and core features of an effective CBDC, including resilience and security, convenience and low cost, a clear legal framework and a role for the private sector. Now, the race is now on, and it's clear that CBDCs are on their way. Today, we discuss a fundamental issue which crops up regularly in our roundtables with central banks, namely the importance of privacy in CBDC, albeit while reconciling that with regulatory needs on know your customer and similar issues. We'll talk about that also in the context of centralized and decentralized networks. I will also discuss programmable money, an idea gaining momentum but not yet well defined or understood. And we'll talk about the underlying technology and the set of features which would be part of a programmable money system. Phantom, first to you, what are the requirements for a functioning central bank digital currency, and how could the design of CBDC support a more resilient payments landscape?
Yeah, thank you, John. Blockchain can be defined as a system that sacrifices performance for the sake of increased security and decentralization. To become a useful and deployable CBDC, any CBDC implementation should perform as faster as other competing payment systems such as credit cards. Also, it is desirable to outperform most cryptocurrencies to compete in the cross-border payment of choices. For this, we need to solve the blockchain trilemma also. That is, performance, security, and decentralization cannot be achieved at the same time. MetaMui have solved the blockchain trilemma by identifying the fact that the current blockchain is not truly decentralized. It is obviously structurally decentralized, but operationally very centralized. By reversing this, having structurally centralized but operationally decentralized architecture, we can achieve high-performance blockchain ever possible. MetaMui can outperform all blockchain-based platforms and centralized payment platforms. Metamui is the only CBDC platform that can outperform the so-called the world fastest CBDC, Chinese ECNY. Blockchain-based CBDC should not only solve the blockchain trilemma, but also the CBDC trilemma. CBDC trilemma is identity, privacy, and programmability cannot be achieved at the same time. We cannot ignore privacy for the sake of achieving rigor compliance and implementing programmable money. Metamui's answer to this trilemma is the use of decentralized identity system such as self-sovereign identity to find the perfect equilibrium of CBDC design trilemma. Self-sovereign identity is very famous for its advanced privacy protection. By having SSID, self-sovereign identity-based blockchain system, we can incorporate both privacy and transparency into the blockchain-based CBDC system. Also, we can use zero-knowledge encryption to protect the transaction privacy of blockchain data.
Thanks very much, Phantom. The trilemma that you talk about crops up again and again in the OMFIF discussions with central banks. You mentioned the one perhaps that's furthest forward in the major economies in China, and they somewhat solve that by subordinating one of the three, in their case, privacy, which they talk about quite openly. And we'll explore more about how your technology can solve or work with this trilemma. Charles, could you talk, please, about centralized versus decentralized networks with respect to these privacy issues, and also what regulators can and can't and should know with respect to identity?
Yeah, well, I think that question takes us to the heart of the problem here, that the characteristic of decentralization, I think, is anonymity. So we're faced directly with this question around privacy. And as you and Phantom are saying, that's one of the balancing items in the trade-offs that we're making in any architecture here. The thing that strikes me most is the lack of common ground between the regulatory community and the developer community. And we do have common ground. I think that the desire for payments to be faster, quick, cheaper and safer is common to everybody who's developing. But I think the starting positions of the two camps make it difficult to reach objective positions in this. So the regulators think about how money should be regulated, and the crypto asset community thinks about what the technology could do. So I think that explains why we're fairly consistently talking at cross purposes. And from the legal perspective, you know, famously, lawyers should say what the law is, not what the law should be. But the difficulties with this is that the two communities, I think, start with their own biases and go from there. So it's a conventional thing to hear in the webinars and podcasts from the crypto asset community that decentralization enables the new products and protocols to live outside the conventional legal framework. And by that, they generally mean the difficulties of enforcement against a decentralized network. Now, I think the problem with that is that may be technologically correct, but there is no parallel legal system. There is only the legal system. And clearly, a persistent and enthusiastic regulator will be able to enforce against these projects, ultimately. So I think the key is to try and bring the communities together and get more common ground beyond simply those three commercial aims, which only take us so far when we get to these policy questions around privacy.
Thank you, Charlie. Phantom, we'll come on to the extent to which your technology can reconcile these two seemingly opposite poles. But could you talk first about centralized versus decentralized networks? They're not quite as centralized or decentralized as they might sound, are they, Phantom?
Yes. Actually, in my opinion, this centralization and decentralization are not completely opposite concepts. Every system has some degree of centralization and decentralization part. I see everything as a spectrum. The blockchain system is structurally decentralized, but from an operational point of view, it is completely centralized system because every node works as a one single virtual computer, virtual node, and then it can operate, it can process the transaction one at a time. That means one by one. So it is very centralized operation. So therefore, it is a key understanding that we should utilize both centralized and decentralized architecture to solve the key privacy issues. Blockchain promises the possibility of programmable money. We use smart contract to implement the programmable money. However, one critical problem in current smart contract design is that it runs on the network in a very centralized manner. Therefore, if you are to apply the smart contract to the user's private information, we need to collect and transfer all the data to the blockchain. It's kind of a centralized location. Noting that blockchain is itself a virtually centralized database mechanism. We need to decentralize the smart contract operation to prevent the collection of users' private information. MetaMui is the first blockchain to achieve this decentralization of smart contract operations. MetaMui's chain code, you know, the chain code is a smart contract alternative term. MetaMui's chain code can run on the edge of the blockchain, which means the user's device. So edge means the user's device, such as smartphone, and can apply the user's information on the edge of the system. Therefore, we don't need to gather all users' information on the blockchain. This is a great improvement in the design of blockchain and smart contract structure to achieve users' privacy.
Thank you, Phantom. We know from OnFIF's own surveys that particularly some important developed markets, the US and Germany come to mind, users are very reluctant to let go of the complete privacy or almost complete privacy that cash represents. What are the appropriate levels, Phantom, of privacy of CBDC should have, and would it be possible to replicate the privacy of cash, which we know from a number of questionnaires that we carried out is important to many users in developed markets?
In short, it is not possible to have the exact same features as a physical paper cash. Going digital has both advantages and disadvantages. In my opinion, we can mitigate the shortcomings with the additional benefit of having a digital version of cash. One major benefit of having digital cash is the possibility of using the internet to send and receive money. This was never possible with the paper cash. However, this additional benefit has a potential side effect also. If you make digital cash fully anonymous, we may end up expanding the underground economy, allowing money laundering and, you know, illegal trading on a global scale. Even though it is possible from a technical point of view to design a fully anonymous cash similar to cryptocurrency, you know, cryptocurrency already achieved this. In fact, the ultimate purpose of many governments while issuing CBDC is to eliminate the underground economy. Adding to that, we have a legal reason, which is the need to satisfy the regulatory framework of financial system. That's why we need to come up with a solution that balances these two conflicting goals. In my opinion, the ideal equilibrium in designing the privacy of aspect of digital cash is to have some kind of traceability of the sender without revealing the user's private information. This means that we make sure most of our transactions are encrypted and anonymous. However, when there is a need to identify the user, we should be able to identify the user with the aid of what is called off-chain information from the legal authority. For example, if you would like to identify and trace the hackers, we can get the information from the issuer of the original certificate of the specific user. In summary, no personal information can be retrieved from the blockchain, but with the aid of sidechain data, we can identify the users of the digital cash. This kind of separation of network is a good balance of achieving the right level of privacy while preventing any kind of illegal activities.
Charles, we've heard there Phantom describing what sounds like an artful compromise between the regulatory need to identify people when there's a need to do so, and preserving privacy, if not anonymity, where the user would like it. We know that people, particularly developed markets, put great store in preserving the anonymity of paper money. Do we think that we're simply going to have to forget about that? In other words, that society will need to develop a new attitude to cash in order to implement CBDC, or can and should anonymity be preserved by CBDC, particularly in those developed markets that treasure it?
Well, I think not overnight. So the social aspect of money will mean that the privacy benefits of cash, I think, will take us a while to move beyond. So that suggests to me that we are going to have some sort of compromise, and I can see the broad shape of a compromise could be similar to what's been in place for physical cash for a while. So a limit on transaction sizes. That is, from a policy perspective, it strikes that compromise. It's technically possible. Certainly, we've seen recently that ransomware businesses are discovering that the FBI is more than a match for pseudonymous networks. And the points that Phantom makes around the technology is able to follow the policy choices here, that you can program as much or as little privacy as you like into this. I think CBDC is itself a compromise, and we're seeing that regulators are much more positive about the benefits of CBDC and stablecoins in the private context than they are about cryptocurrencies more generally. So it seems to me that we are feeling our way towards this. I think we're not going to break new ground. Money's been around for so long that the social aspects of it are baked in now. But as technology develops, that is going to lead to a change in people's relationship with technology and with money. And so I think we'll get there, but it will take some time. It couldn't be something that's imposed from above in a short period.
And we've certainly found from surveys that we've done that attitudes vary enormously from region to region. So the issue of anonymity and privacy is much less important in a number of key emerging markets than in developed markets. So we may see faster progress in those regions than in developed markets on CBDC, and perhaps we're already doing that. Issue of identity and how to manage identity, Phantom, you were just talking about that. Could you go into more detail about how identity verification works with your platform, please.
One of the most obvious findings in the blockchain system is that it was originally designed with the concept of anonymity in mind. Because of this reason, adding the identity to the existing blockchain system is an ad hoc system at best. One major concern regarding having this kind of ad hoc system is that it is not mathematically or cryptographically provable. Technically speaking, I do not recommend using an ad hoc system for CBDC implementation because it is easily hackable. So if so, then what is the right approach to embedding the identity to the blockchain? In my opinion, we should go back to the original design and completely redesign the blockchain system from the identity point of view, rather than anonymity. That is the reason why I have designed MetaMui as an identity-based blockchain. However, just having an identity-based blockchain is not good enough. We need to solve the Oracle problem. The way we connect this digital identity to the real people's identity. MetaMui has a public DID. DID is a digital identity. Public DID system. Real world legal authority, such as government office, can have a public identity on MetaMui platform and register the signature. Then this government office can verify the identity, nationality, or other characteristics of the user and issue the digital certificate. The verification process itself can be done off-chain, which means outside of the blockchain. Then after the verification, an online certificate, digital certificate, is issued to the user, so he or she can use the certificate as identity proof when needed.
Thanks, Phantom. I want to come on now to the issue of programmable money, which sounds, superficially anyway, completely at odds with the idea of certainly privacy. Anecdotal examples we have heard in our sessions, for example, would be the idea that you would distribute welfare payments in CBDC and oblige the recipient not to spend those, for example, on alcohol, as one example. Tell me, starting with you, Charles, how do you implement programmable money without sacrificing personal privacy or regulatory controls, on the other hand? What are the use cases of programmable money?
So I think we face the same list of challenges that we were running through in the previous questions, that lack of common ground between what the technology can do and what regulators think is appropriate. And now we're bringing in also all those social policy questions around using the example that you give. Is that a valid thing for a government to be doing. The thing that interests me in particular about programmable money is that we've fixed the easy bit. So real time transfer of value we can do, and Phantom mentioned that around cross border payments, making them quicker and cheaper. The broader use cases for programmable money, I think, are far beyond those sort of welfare examples and go into the wider financial markets and how programmable money will replace the type of infrastructure that we currently have. So I think about it more in the sense of lending transactions, where the hard bit isn't in a lending transaction, that the payments, that those things are relatively straightforward, can be coded through smart contracts and would be recognized by the courts. And here we make the distinction that we generally make at this point between smart contracts as recognized by a computer scientist and smart contracts as recognized by the courts. The second is a subset of the first. So lending transactions have terms relating to payment, the disbursement of the funds, the payment of interest, the repayment of principal, but in the corporate sense, wrapped around that are all of the other commercial terms, representations, undertakings, events of default that go to the credit testing of the borrower. And that's the bit that I think programmable money hasn't yet solved in the traditional context, but interestingly has solved in the crypto context. So in decentralized finance, the solutions to those points are commercial solutions. The loans are very short term. They take place in a liquid market. They are over collateralized. The collateral is foreclosable automatically. So the techniques there are fascinating to me because they, I can't help but think that they suggest a possible way forward for the traditional lending markets. To what extent will traditional lending take advantage of the benefits of programmable money? And where it does, it seems to me that it will need to borrow those architectures from decentralized finance, which itself has taken those architectures from repos and derivatives. None of it's new, of course. And then I maybe make a final point about money and efficiency. And this again relates back to some of the things that we talked about before. I see some of the commentary now is balancing programmable money and privacy and these issues with cash. And we go back to some of the old things that we used to hear, that cash is free to transact with. And those of us with a background in digital money would say that we thought that we'd dealt with that point some time ago. So the transaction itself may be free, but cash itself is expensive. It's security printed. You have to carry it around. It's heavy. You need to buy armored trucks and pay for security when you've got it. So I'd be concerned if the commentary around CBDC is weighing it up against cash and looking at cash as a cheaper alternative than we know that all of the studies show, in fact, it is. So there's a broad set of issues, again, that all interrelate around these questions, but the benefits of programmable money in the broader financial markets, I think, are yet to be tested, but it would require the regulators to engage with the crypto community working on DeFi projects to a greater extent. And we've seen in the US, Hester Peirce and the SEC have been very proactive recently in engaging with that community. I think regulators more generally should adopt the same approach.
So do you think, Charles, in summary, that programmable money, as you see it, is probably more immediately applicable to the wholesale side rather than the retail side, which I'll explore again in a moment with Phantom. But you're talking about replacing essentially strings of contracts for bonds and loans.
Yeah, I think so, because I think that the natural consequence of what's happening in the retail side of digital assets and cryptocurrencies is a speed of transaction. And in the wholesale markets, we have technology questions that are actually hiding customer service questions. So in a lending transaction, why is it the case that a term sheet is signed and then the transaction goes off to the lawyers, and it's then a sort of relatively expensive 4 or 6 week process for that to be documented and the borrower to get the funds. So I think that the challenges being thrown down to the markets from as much a customer service perspective as a technology perspective. So I'm conscious as we go through this conversation we just keep adding problems rather than solving them. But there you go.
Thanks, Charles. And back to you, Phantom, now on the technological side, and specifically whether you can implement programmable money without sacrificing personal privacy or regulatory controls on the other hand. Tell us from your point of view what the use cases of programmable money are and how it would work from a technical point of view.
Sure, John. So when talking about CBDC, many people have particular concern about the law of state surveillance or controlling or big brother. With digitized money, the government can watch every single move of their citizens and sanction any individual and block the person from even buying the food. This is possibly extreme scenario. However, we can avoid this by rethinking the fundamental design structure of CBDC. Some engineers insist on collecting all the information in a centralized location and process the data. This is a simple and easy solution, but highly centralized power can always lead to corruption and abuse. We should not use this kind of centralized architecture to fundamentally eliminate the possibility of abusing or manipulating the user's private information. MetaMui has two innovations for tackling these issues. So far, most of smart contract or chain code runs on a centralized virtual system. For this system, for this reason, to apply the smart contract, the data should be collected and stored on the blockchain. To avoid this, MetaMui designed a chain code that can run on the edge. So that users' personal data can be processed on the user's device without reading it. In that way, we can apply the chain code based on the user's information without causing any damage to the user's private data. In my opinion, this is the perfect way users' privacy can be protected. Such process and anonymized running data can be added to the algorithmic central bank. This is a kind of federated running mechanism. Simply saying, it is a decentralized machine running system. So we can make a decision based on the collected information of the user's personal data, but we don't reveal any of the user's specific personal data.
Thank you, Phantom. Again, it sounds like a carefully crafted compromise between collecting information but not necessarily sharing it. Tell us, as you develop this technology, from your point of view, what are the most significant trade-offs between some of the design choices?
Sure, John. So the most controversial design choices are trade-offs between privacy versus identity. We are all talking about this entire session today. In fact, many people believe that these two design goals are not achievable at the same time. Actually, this is the main cause of the tension between cryptocurrency community and the traditional financial world. Anonymous system cannot satisfy the regulatory requirements of the financial system, and cryptocurrency system keep denying the adoption of identity concept to protect users' privacy. However, in my opinion, these two goals are achievable at the same time. We already have a technology that is available in the market. One of the most advanced digital identity technology called self-sovereign identity has already solved this problem and already have this characteristic of both protecting the privacy while providing the identity. Since Self-sovereign identity is a decentralized identity system. We solve the identity and privacy dilemma by adapting a decentralized identity. In SSID, self-sovereign identity, the user's personal data is stored and controlled by the user. The data never leave the user's device without a prior consent of the user. This is a radical shift from the most centralized and incompatible identity system that are widely used today. MetaMui completely redesigned the blockchain based on SSID technology. By combining the SSID and blockchain token mechanism, MetaMui was able to create a new identity-based CBDT system that can protect users' privacy while providing an identity-based transfer system that can satisfy travel rules and other regulatory requirements such as know your customer, anti-money laundering, and counter-financing of terrorism.
Good, thank you. This sounds like detailed and complicated technology. One wonders how it will keep pace with future developments in this field, regulatory and technological. Could you talk about how to design a CBDC that can adapt to future needs as technology evolves? Firstly, to you, Charles.
Yeah, so I think the starting point is for the regulators to be clear about the policy choices they're making and the context that they're making the choices in. Because I think identity means different things to different people. And in the crypto world, where people talk about identity, they're often talking about Web 3.0, the Internet of Value, the metaverse, and people being able to have different identities in that environment. The regulators have a narrower brief, which is saying to people, don't engage in financial crime. We've talked about the lack of common ground, but I think there is a completely common ground in relation to that. I don't come across crypto community people or developers who have a different view. I think there is a very clear sense in the community that the association with financial crime is an unwanted embarrassment. It's an unintended consequence, foreseeable, but an unintended consequence of development so far. So I think as we work our way through the compromise and trade-offs, it is possible for the regulators to be accommodated, because in that sense of prohibiting and restricting financial crime, there's 100% agreement from the community, or close to 100% agreement from the community, because that is an aim of the community in order for these projects to scale and have the value that developers would look for them to have. And because it is therefore a relatively limited requirement of regulators, that's not to say it's easy, but it is it's easy to say, if not easy to do, to limit financial crime, that I think that the technology will keep running ahead. The technologists can be frustrated by the fact that as they try and deploy new things, the regulation just doesn't keep up. And that leads to the point that I made earlier, where they will reference the fact that they believe they're in a parallel or in a different legal environment, which can't be the case. But having the communities work closely together so that they do understand each other's aims and goals, I think we'll find more of the common ground than perhaps we're seeing at the moment. And that probably takes me back to repeating the point. I'm really impressed with what the SEC has been doing in terms of outreach, education, understanding. And that needs to flow through the whole of society. So money is a social construct, and we need people right across society to be engaged with this, to understand what money is, what it does, how they can use it. So that education, I think, as we educate people and young people in particular about technology, that they would educate themselves, or we'd educate them about money as well. And that for me is one of the benefits of crypto. I know it's a sensitive topic for regulators that young people can be trading in crypto on apps on their phone, but I come across a lot of young people who do that, and they are responsible in doing so. They are only in trading small amounts. They are well aware of the risks. I think one of the things that came out of the FCA report relatively recently was that I think 12% of crypto users, according to the survey, thought their funds were protected, and that received a lot of press. I think it would have been perhaps fairer for the press to say that almost 90% of crypto users understood that their funds weren't protected. That seemed to be quite a positive outcome. And, you know, there may even be questions around what we mean by protected, because some of the apps provide insurance for hacks or loss of coins. So even some people who said that they thought that their funds were protected may have been correct. They may not have been talking about the financial compensation scheme. So getting a more engaged conversation right across society, I think, is the key to this.
In other words, I think, Charles, you're saying that regulation and technology will need to co-evolve rather than one specifically adapting to the other.
I think exactly that. I think we'll creep forward rather than leap forward. And regulators will use more technology over time. I know I'm not the only person saying that, but as AI and similar develops, I think it's inconceivable that regulators won't be using that as part of their toolkit for regulation and policy setting.
Phantom, what's the appropriate level of privacy that would keep, say, privacy-conscious markets such as the US or Germany happy with the potential loss of physical cash, while reconciling that with KYC and AML? How can this balance be implemented technically?
In Metamui digital cash system, the cash is issued to the identity of the user, and it has an expiration date. Since the identity number itself is a number without any kind of personal information in it, no personal information can be leaked just by having an identity number. Also, in the self-sovereign identity system, only the user has a full authority to whether provide the personal information or not. Metamui is a far more superior identity system in terms of privacy protection. During the valid period before the cash's expiration date, only the issued user can spend it by transferring the cash to the recipient identity with the endorsement signature of the sender. In this regard, it is almost the same as the check payment. When the merchant receives the payment, he or she can claim the cash and deposit to his or her identity-based account. Since all this payment and endorsement is done with an identity number and digital signature and does not need use any kind of real name or any other private information, the user's privacy is protected. In case when user lost a smartphone and has a wallet with a digital cash in it, another person who find the wallet cannot spend the cash without appropriate security credentials such as password or other biometric information, and the lost user can wait until the expiration date. And if there is no claim came to the banknote, the user can receive the credit to his or her identity-based account. In summary, we use a semi-identity-based digital cash system to provide the recovery mechanism.
Thanks, Phantom. Can you tell me a little bit more about the business model of SWN. I know that the central banking and regulatory communities are looking closely at the business models of the technology firms that want to take part in the CBDC revolution.
Sure. One unique approach in the CBDC space that Sovereign is doing is that SWN is actually working on providing a cloud service style CBDC platform. Metamui is a permission public blockchain that Sovereign Wallet Network, SWN global companies, central banks, commercial banks, and any other government entities operate together. It is a cloud service like CBDC platform that any government can acquire and start issuing the CBDC instantly. It doesn't require any custom development or smart contract programming to do so. I have many experience in providing security solutions to government organizations and other financial institutions. Based on my experience, I have a serious doubt about using an unstable, one-time custom build system to these very critical financial systems. Many CBDC projects worldwide still have this very dangerous approach to build a very crucial social infrastructure system such as CBDC. Metamui has a radically different approach. We start with a core system that is working and continuously add the capability one by one. We already have launched the mainnet on January 3rd this year and successfully upgrade the mainnet to version 2 on May 28th. Since Metamui is already up and running, we are continuously challenged by many hackers and we can continuously upgrade the system. Central bank users of Metamui can benefit from using this proven and stable CBDC platform to publish their own CBDC. Metamui is one of the first Meta blockchain, and CBDC published on Metamui can have their own blockchain ledger and central bank node that publish the specific country's CBDC can have full control over their CBDC. We do not store the entire token data on a single monolithic blockchain such as Ethereum. Therefore, Metamui CBDC platform provides stable CBDC code with custom built CBDC-like control of the published CBDC. In short, best of both world approach.
Thank you, Phantom. Phantom, as you design this technology, how can you help design it so that it can adapt to future needs as the technology evolves?
I'd like to mention about the upgradability of the system. One of the major beliefs in the blockchain community is that is the code is the law principle. It says that once it is agreed upon, a single line of code cannot be changed. Otherwise, it is a break of the consensus, and therefore it is not the same blockchain that we originally agreed to. Because of this belief, that technological, logic, is a belief, many early blockchain projects do not have any upgradability mechanism built in them. Because of this, there has been many hard fork problems in the blockchain project. A hard fork means the separation of the blockchain project. The same principle goes for smart contracts also. A smart contract is an application programming technology for the blockchain. In Metamui team, we have a different idea. We believe that blockchain projects have to be able to upgrade to adapt to the new requirements and prepare for the future. At least, we will be able to upgrade the system when a new security vulnerability is identified in the system. At the end of the day, the CBDC system is a security product and new or old security breaches should be fixed. Without the upgradability of the CBDC system, it is very dangerous to use this kind of system. For this reason, I have designed the MetaMui to be upgradable in both mainnet code and chain code. Also, we can even upgrade the protocol itself based on the governance and consensus protocol. That's why we have implemented modular hot swapping technology so that we can upgrade the system without shutting down the node and reboot the system. MetaMui also has a modular design structure. By adding more and more chain code, the capability of the system gradually increases. And we can adapt the future need and the change of the societal and other requirements. In this way, we have avoided the building of one-shot or Big Bang-style development of the financial system. Start with a small code module, small core module. We can gradually add and upgrade the system to fit the need of the future requirement.
Thanks, Phantom. And thank you again, Charles. Thank you both for joining us. This discussion, certainly from my point of view, seems to have moved on a lot in the last year, where technologists and regulators regarded one another, I think, with a degree of suspicion, were talking past one another. It's clear those two worlds are working hard to understand one another at first, and I think maybe make accommodations for one another over the next year or so. So it's been very interesting to talk to you both about this, and leaves me, I think, optimistic that technologists and regulators will be able to make the necessary accommodations to cater for at least a degree of privacy without compromising all those regulatory, sensible regulatory needs to prevent money laundering and other types of financial crime. So thank you very much both for joining me today, and we look forward to talking to you again as these issues evolve over the next few months. Thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you for listening to the OMFIF podcast.